member of the Unacceptables. My mind is malignant.
Today, I open up my book for all to see. The words I speak are mine alone today.
Yes.
No offenses, no pretenses, just poetry.
Welcome to Griot Silenci.
I am here with Nomi Stone. So let me introduce myself first. My name is Ayen Kwal, and I work in the Art Science Lab at University of Texas in Dallas as the Physics and Art Coordinator. One of the projects I've worked on looks at the intersex of science and poetry. And I got to meet, it was quite interesting. I attended a lunchbox meeting and somebody, like a little bird, just told me, "You might want to talk to Nomi Stone," and she flew away. Mm-hmm. I don't know her name, but I got to meet Nomi Stone, who has a very interesting profile, and she's a very lovely person. She is a poet. She studied cultural anthropology. Sorry. First of all, why don't you introduce yourself as you would like?
Oh, hello. Hi, Ayen. Thank you so much for having me. This is so lovely. I am a professor of poetry at UT Dallas. I've just begun teaching there this year. And I'm also a cultural anthropologist. And my first two books of poems are based on field studies I did as an anthropologist. And as you say, Ayen, I have been particularly interested in the convergences and conversations between science and poetry in my own writing and in the class that I was teaching last spring and which I'm again teaching in the fall.
Let's talk about a little bit more about this class.
Mm.
Well, first of all, what led you into this science poetry area?
Okay. Well, I guess there's maybe a shorter answer and a longer answer. The short answer is I began writing poems when I was about 6 years old. And my father actually used to leave me poems under my pillow, and we would read them together in the morning when I was a kid. And I began writing poetry. And I think that even from a really young age, for me, poetry has always been something like a practice of deep looking and feeling, and a way to work through representing what it's like to be inside of time and to be inside of a body. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, the natural world, and also those who investigate it, right, scientists, are a source of kind of abundance and fascination to me. So that's kind of the short answer, but I could give you a little bit more preface, because there's kind of a longer trajectory that I went through to get here. And I guess I would say this. So I'm trained as an anthropologist, and I spent a lot of my adult life doing field work. And what I was focused on the Middle East, and most recently, I was researching the 2003 through 2011 Iraq War, and I was researching and I was writing about these different questions around war and empire and power. And the book that I mentioned in the introduction, my book of poems, Kill Class, that came out this past year, is about that research. But kind of on the tails of that research, I became really interested in, I guess I would say, the intersection of science with power. Mm-hmm. I became really, really curious about what was happening to the scientists of Iraq in particular. So that was one entry point. But as I began to think more about science, and also, you know, I guess the natural world itself, right, the world that science investigates, I felt something kind of open in me. Because, you know, as I said, I had been trained as an anthropologist, but I started to wonder, could I make field work something bigger and not put so many boxes around the world? Mm-hmm. Like, what would it look like to become a field worker of the natural world itself and the sciences? Mm-hmm. And I have this really strong memory of A few summers ago, I was in Scotland. That's where my wife is from. And we were visiting these friends, one of whom is a zoologist, and they have this, they're on this extraordinary sprawl of land. And I saw, for the first time, I saw frog spawn. And was on this like really lush bank of this pond. And I remember thinking these like little jellied, like ovals, they like looked like eyes and they were so vivid. And I went inside, to see our zoologist friend, Athel. And I, you know, I asked him so many questions about frog spawn. And then he took me, he has this amazing, laboratory upstairs in his house. And so he gave me this tour, and I remember holding like the mandibles of a hyena, and I interviewed him a bunch that summer. And on this island off the coast of Scotland, there are a lot of marine biologists there. And so I also was doing interviews of them. And I there was a dissection of an octopus that I watched. It was an octopus that had washed ashore. And it was something that was really fertile for me. And I just wrote dozens of poems in this period. And I thought, you know, I want to kind of push this further, in my writing, but I thought I want to teach about this. And poetry class, because for me, teaching is like, I don't know, it's kind of a beautiful way of learning. It's kind of pushing me, to ask myself questions in order to engage in those questions in a room full of students, right? So that's kind of how it happened. Kind of a long answer, but it's been kind of a journey.
Yeah, that's a lot to unpack, actually. You talked about science and power, Iraqi scientists, you experience in that very romantic sounding lab in Scotland. I want to go there.
I know, a lot of different pieces there.
And your experiences with your students and what you learned. Well, there are many points that I want to touch on what you just said. But first of all, okay, let's start with your experience in Scotland, right? You describing that, it just it kind of, you know, excited me a little bit. Because as a child, I grew up in a, you know, in a society context that kind of emphasized on, you know, sciences. So growing up, your parents would be like, you know, be a doctor or be an engineer or be a lawyer, you know, and there's nothing else in this world for you, my son or daughter.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You know, it's just, and the reason for that is obviously because science has been so influential in the modern world. So the reason some countries are above others is because of the scientific progress, the ability to have more technology than, you know, other countries, and all the other third world countries are really trying their best to catch up, and in the process they're indebting themselves to other countries, you know, to build them railroads, to build them infrastructure and things like that. But yeah, that's why, you know, our society kind of emphasized getting to the sciences. But then at the same time, going to school, you know, we were in this little box, in this little white, you know, four-walled classroom. And, you know, the professor had a book, or the teacher, and we basically learned from the book. There was rarely any, you know, let's go outside and explore. Let's go look at frogs, or let's go look at plants. And the few events that happened, it was more of the teacher felt like, okay, guys, let's take a break today.
So how did you become a scientist and a poet?
So for me, I've always loved writing. I've always admired my own writing. It's funny to say that. I've always, like, you know, when I write, I'm like, wow, that really came out for me. I remember those experiences when I was younger, you know, but I never really wrote publicly. Mm-hmm. And over time, I started writing as a self-reflection. So I have two journals that I had since 2015. I'm holding one right now.
Mm.
And I would just like fill it in. You know, they were nice leather-bound, clear, you know, empty page journals. And I would fill them in. And recently, I just finished one. And as time went by, I found that my words, you know, they would be more and more poetic.
Mm.
And over time, like 2 years ago, I would like attend here and there a few poetry events. Science and poetry, for me, it started out as kind of a way of processing the information I was learning.
Mm-hmm.
So in physics, I majored in physics, and mm-hmm. I really struggled. I really struggled to just put everything together, because
mm-hmm.
without understanding like the full picture, I would struggle to be engaged in what I was learning. And a lot of times in physics,
mm-hmm.
I felt like I had to like focus on, you know, doing this, doing that. For example, how to derive such and such equation,
or, mm-hmm.
you know, the technical details.
Mm-hmm.
There would be so much and so overwhelming
mm-hmm.
that I would lose sight of kind of the grander picture of what I was learning. Yeah. So every time we started a new topic, I would sort of just freestyle write about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is this? It, you know, it doesn't, does it make sense? Does it mean this and that? What if... But before that, even in high school, mm-hmm. I had the grace of having a physics teacher who was very passionate about what he did, and he really encouraged inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
So during his class, I always had a blank page, and I would doodle, and I would write little stories about what he was saying, like little scenarios, and that for me engaged me in the subject, and yeah.
And also physics. I mean, of course, it's like looking at the universe itself and matter and, you know, it's these questions like are like existential too, you know. They kind of ask to be written about or represented maybe yeah. in other ways besides equations, I think. And I think for me as well, maybe there's something around the that which is on the cusp of like, which is very difficult to represent, which is all at the kind of the edge of what is knowable. And mm-hmm. that kind of mysterious space, poetry is a really generous, possibility, I think, for those kinds of spaces of mystery, right? Poetry has so much negative space. It has the edge of the line break. It has unknowability kind of, in its own formal core, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I understand. I understand why you felt that compulsion. I really do.
Yeah, it's interesting because in physics, I remember, I mean, it is understood in physics that there's only so much you can go without the math.
Mm.
You know? Mm-hmm. So it's always like, at some point, you stop understanding language.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, it's only the math that makes sense. And
mm-hmm.
it's very difficult to take that abstractness
mm-hmm.
and put it in words.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do, it's you know, there's just so much more, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. there's definitely a great possibility for poetry.
Mm-hmm.
In science, and I recall my lab director Roger Molina.
Mm-hmm.
He at some point he was obsessed with the idea of how do you help scientists, you know, describe what they're doing, because
mm-hmm.
obviously their zone is not language, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people are eclectic and diverse.
But, mm. Right. So it's an act of translation.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, ooh, I got lost in that. So, um, So the other thing is science and power.